technology has become an ingrained and crucial part of our day-to-day lives. We rely on phones to wake us up, the internet to do our jobs, and social media to keep us in touch in ways we couldn't have dreamed 20 or 30 years ago. As adults, we're used to this technology, even if we wish we could take a break from it sometimes.
But kids born over the last couple of decades mark the first generations to grow up with the internet, and children today are inundated all over the place by advertising geared specifically towards them. They carry out many of their friendships on social media platforms like Snapchat, and they use technology like it's an extension of themselves. But what effect could this all have on children in the long term, and how can we teach our kids to navigate this high-tech world?
Jessica Taylor Petrowski joins us now. She's an associate professor at the Department of Communication Studies at the University of Amsterdam, and she's also the co-author of the new book, Plugged In, How Media Attract and Affect Youth. Jessica, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
Well, why is it so hard to pin down the effects of media on children from toddlers to teenagers?
Well, I think you just addressed one of the key points, because as children get older, the effects change. So age is a big factor in this, and actually because children are different. So we know individual differences play a key role in identifying which children are affected by media and how.
That's right. And that's a point you make again and again in your book, that there's not really a one size fits all answer. For example, you know, media makes children violent. Well, every child might react differently. So how do we get a clear handle on what's actually happening? How do you study it?
Well, it's really complicated to study, actually. I think one of the key things is we have to be sensitive to these differences as scientists, and at the beginning really say which kids are more likely to be affected. And we really try to think about these differences in children and really how they process this content differently. But it's really tough for me when parents will say to me, you know, is my child going to be affected by this media? It's never a simple yes or no. And when parents ask me these questions, it's often, how do you see your child responding, and sort of working from that. But it's really a very complex issue, and media is only making it more complicated.
That's right. And you say a lot of the coverage of the effects of the media, it seems like it's negative, and you talk about how the experts that are often quoted in these articles are experts who may work with a very specific child or small group of children who may be the exception and not the norm. So what do you think stories about children in the media get wrong?
Well, we often call this chocolate headlines, this idea that often the media really, the headlines often suggest negative effects of media. And what happens is they tend to get a lot more attention. The if it bleeds, it leads phenomenon often takes over. And what's missing is some of the nuance, and actually highlighting that for many kids, media may have very little effect. And for many kids, actually can have a very positive role in their lives as well. And I would like to see a little bit more balanced coverage. It's not that there are not negative effects. We call these the dark sides of media in our book, but there's also sunny sides as well.
It does seem as though if you look at sort of the canon of books about children and media coming out recently, past several years, it does seem to veer toward the alarmist side. Attention spans shrinking, children and adults becoming more violent, and communication skills being lost, socialization skills being lost. What happens to the positive side? Is that there too, an equal amount?
Actually, yeah. And a lot of those stories that you hear, those narratives, they're not really, they're cautionary tales in many ways. And I think they're missing the nuance that often these effects are really for very specific subsets of kids. And there's just as many studies to show, for example, that social media can be benefiting children's identity development and friendship formation. We see studies that well-designed educational media can help both in the classroom and at home. We see lots of opportunities of digital gaming for flexible thinking and spatial awareness and 21st century learning skills. So I think a lot of times these alarmist books, unfortunately, they play on fear. And it's not that they're not always true. There are truths to this, but I kind of want to see us move towards a more nuanced perspective and maybe not rely so much on these fear appeals.
Well, a question to kind of start us off, are kids today different than kids were 50 years ago? Are they, for instance, are they growing up faster, maybe in part because of media exposure?
Kids actually are different. This is something we'll hear a lot about. And our research in this book really just does show that different generations of kids, today's generation of kids are physically larger, which we think has a lot to do with nutrition. They tend to have greater flexible thinking skills, so actually they seem to be more intelligent. And this seems to be potentially linked to digital gaming, for example. And we also see that they may have some indications of being slightly more narcissistic, which we have to discuss in the context of today's society where some narcissism might actually be healthy. I mean, the selfie is a narcissistic behavior in many ways, yet it's very normal. And we see increased diagnoses of things like depression and ADHD. But again, that actually may be more that we're more sensitive to it than previous generations.
Could it be that we also haven't studied it in this particular way before?
Exactly. We may be, there are so many different ways that this has been measured in the past versus now. It's sometimes a little difficult to compare generations. We do see some differences, but what we also see is that there's perhaps even more differences within this generation of children.
We're talking right now with Jessica Taylor Petrowski. She's an associate professor at the University of Amsterdam, and we're talking about her new book. It's called Plugged In, How Media Attract and Affect Youth. And looking now at very young children, I mean, it used to be that if you looked at kids, let's say, from 0 to 2, they were not media consumers. And then it seems as though there was a kind of a seismic shift that happened. And you, in your book, you talk about the Teletubbies as being sort of this eureka moment when TV executives realize, hey, we can market to these, you know, really create programming to these really little kids. How did that change things?
Well, you're absolutely right. This so-called diaper demographic really emerged with things such as Teletubbies when suddenly there was an opportunity to target this audience and effectively use and merchandise. Merchandising really played a role in showing, hey, you can make money on this. And today we actually see that the starting age for when young children are using media has actually decreased. Some of estimates suggest they might be using some media as early as 4 months of age. And we see this particularly true with the app generation, where there's more apps available for these little ones. And it's certainly something that I think researchers are trying to get a handle on and understanding what attracts these children to this media and what do these effects look like.
And I guess what parents want to know, is this bad for my kid? If my kid is watching TV, or even if it's geared toward that age group, is it going to hurt them?
I think that's a really reasonable question that parents have. And what I typically try to tell parents, often they'll ask me how much. Give me an estimate. What's okay? It's really hard to give any set estimates on how much media. I really focus on the quality of media and having parents think about, does it seem to align with their values? Does it feel okay to them? Some media we're seeing really plays a really healthy role in kids' development, even very young children. I will also say, however, that particularly for our very young diaper demographic, and even our preschoolers, we see some concerns of background media. So when your child's in the room, if they're doing something else, turning the media off is certainly something I would recommend. But if they're using the media at that moment, whether it's a television show or an app or in a game, and it's developmentally appropriate and something that you as a parent feel comfortable with, I feel pretty good about that.
So why turn it off? What's at risk there?
So when there's background media on in the room, and it's particularly media that's not for them, so often it might be parentally adult-directed content, what some of the studies are showing is it often affects the quality of the child's play. So, and it can really disrupt them. And that kind of makes sense when you think about how media is constantly trying to grab our attention. That's the look at me. There's noises, there's sounds, there's things that try to orient us to the screen. And if you're a little one and you're in the room playing and something's calling your attention, there's a lot of distraction and task shifting that happens.
So it's the kind of effect when you're out at a restaurant and there's one of those huge TVs right above your table and everyone stops talking and starts looking at the TV. Same thing?
It's exactly why I won't let my husband face the TV at dinner, because I know if we're at a restaurant, he's going to be watching the game instead of talking to me.
It's hard not to.
Yeah,
it is. It's right there. So what happens when children get a little older and, you know, they're not just watching Teletubbies hop around, but there are more narrative themes going on there. What happens with that kind of exposure?
We actually see a lot of benefits of a narrative-based television for children. When it's really well-designed content, children understand the narrative. They often, at this age, let's say in that 3 to 6 year age group, they really enjoy having it repeated over and over again. This is the age where parents will say, how many times can she possibly watch Frozen? This happens a lot. And narrative's a really healthy way for children to develop their story schema skills, their story understanding, and they really tend to enjoy it. Media is entertaining, and that's okay. It's a good thing.
And as part of this, you get into I think it's called the frilly pink dress syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what that is.
So what happens is during the preschool-aged years, what we see is children are trying to figure out their gender. and they're thinking of their gender identity. And there becomes a point where we often see, sometimes in spite of parents' best efforts otherwise, children really start to align very strongly with a particular gender. We see this gender rigidity happen, and we call it the pink frilly dress phenomenon, where suddenly you'll see little girls wanting to wear their princess dress all day long to the supermarket, to the store, wherever they're going. Mm-hmm. And it's just a moment when they're really identifying their gender. And this often influences their media preferences as well. So the shows they want to watch, the games they want to play, the toys they want to purchase, things of that sort.
So what comes first? Does the pink frilly dress come first, or does the media steering them toward the pink frilly dress comes first?
That's a really good question. We're still trying to understand exactly how gender identity emerges in many ways. Typically, we see that gender is more predictive of media preferences, but it certainly has the potential to have a reinforcing effect. This is also why it's really beautiful when you can see new media that are trying to show different ideas of what gender is and creating more varied spaces for gender. It's also why I really enjoy some digital media where children can design their own avatar and for themselves decide what being a girl might look like or being a boy might look like. And so I think that media plays a powerful role in gender identity.
Well, we're talking right now with Jessica Taylor-Petrowski about the ways that media like the internet can influence children. She's an associate professor at the University of Amsterdam and the co-author of the new book we're discussing today. It's called Plugged In, How Media Attract and Affect Youth.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about children and the media? If you're a teacher or a parent, what are you seeing in your home, in your classroom, from the other kids your kid plays with? Are they communicating with each other more and more at older ages? Digitally? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue our conversation in just a bit here on Central Time.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. And we're continuing our conversation about how media like TV, the internet, social media influence children. And we're speaking now with Jessica Taylor-Petrowski. She's the co-author of the new book, Plugged In, How Media Attract and Affect Youth.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. If you're a parent, what concerns do you have about your children and their exposure to technology and social media? Are there rules in your household? What are those rules? Are they followed strictly? If you're a teacher, what do you see with kids? More and more technology in the classroom, the kids' own, or the educationally endorsed technology? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And before we get to our calls, Jessica, I want to talk a little bit about teenagers, because I think that's an area that can be frightening to parents and to society as a whole. We think teenagers sometimes seem really absorbed in their media, their phone, their texting. We hear about cyberbullying cases, again, about sort of antisocial behavior. Is any of that founded? What do we know?
So I will say that, yes, some of these concerns are absolutely true. Things like cyberbullying, sexual grooming, or child grooming, as we call it, absolutely do occur, unfortunately. And the effects of this are real. They're incredibly concerning, and they're things we need to work on as a society to really eliminate. I will also say that it happens to a very small percentage of our tweens and teens. So to sort of allay some parent fears, it is very rare, but it is incredibly important. What we see, though, interestingly enough, is those children that are unfortunately affected by this, they tend to be children who are also dealing with bullying, for example, offline. They also tend to be children in the tweens and teens in the online space who might friend someone they don't know, so strangers, for example, or post particular images and things that are particularly evoking negative reactions, for example, which says to me, this is actually something we can help teens. We can actually talk to teens in our lives and help them think about safe social media use. There is actually ways to sort of mitigate some of these negative consequences.
And we'll talk more about the mitigation in just a bit. But first, let's take a phone call. We've got Dane joining us from Menominee. Dane, hi.
Hi. So I was pretty interested about your earlier comment with the perception of ADD and depression and anxiety. And I was just wondering what your thoughts were on how media's allowed youth to access more language and how those words and our, you know, understanding of words changes the way we view the world. And I'll take the comment on the air.
Dane, thanks for that and taking that language part of the question. What about the language that we use on the internet and the world, in a way, the world building that that creates? Does that affect how someone might perceive and understand the world?
Well, there's two things with language. So on the one hand, from the younger generation, what we know is that media can actually be a very powerful vocabulary tool, an actual language tool for young children. There's numerous studies that have shown that media can provide an input, particularly when kids are growing up maybe in households or in social environments where maybe there's lower literacy skills. It can really be a very interesting supplemental opportunity for children. So I think that's from a more basic language learning. And then in terms about the language we use and what we share with others, there's a lot of work on what we call expression effects. This idea that how we share what we say about ourselves, for example, in social media, thinking about teens, for example, what they might say, it not only makes them think about themselves and can affect them, but it also affects their peer network. So we do really see a very powerful role about how they share information about themselves and how that affects both the teen and their peer network.
Well, thank you for that call, and let's take another call now from Eddie joining us in Madison. Hi, Eddie.
Hi, thank you. I just had a quick, I guess, question. I have a son who's 13 who watches YouTube all the time. I guess with YouTube, what is your opinion on, for example, so if he's watching a video game or something like that, you know, somebody streaming, and then that video and the next video, just because it has keywords that are similar, may come up, but may not be appropriate. And I see a lot of that.
Okay.
So I'm just wondering what your opinion is for how that would affect the child. And
mm-hmm. Eddie, thank you for that question. I appreciate that. And it is sort of set up to help you, in a way, binge watch videos, and not just YouTube, not to pick on them, but it seems as though the content is endless and it's hard to know. You may have selected one but not the other. So how do you mediate that as a parent?
Well, actually, this comment of that I'm hearing is actually, Eddie, this is your child's not strange at all in this. This is really common. I'm hearing this a lot with our tween and teen audience right now. This is incredibly challenging because we're dealing in a space where it's very hard to know what that next video is going to be. I would love to say, don't worry about it, but that's not true. In fact, often some of the content on places like YouTube and other sites like this, there is content that parents might not be comfortable with. One of the things I can say is if it's possible for you to be in the same space when your child is using it, so if they're consuming YouTube on the iPad and you're in the room while maybe you're cooking dinner, to keep an ear out for that. And then if something comes up that's inappropriate, having a real conversation with your teen or tween and being able to explain why this maybe is inappropriate and what you and coming up with some rules about how to handle that together. So you're really valuing your child's autonomy in this situation. But it's not really that easy to restrict this content.
Thanks a lot for that call, Eddie. And Jessica, you were talking earlier about ways to work on mitigating the negative effects of media, including social media. What do you suggest as the expert here? What should parents do?
Well, I think sometimes there's lots of different ways to approach parenting, of course. And one of the things we've done is try to understand how parents approach media in the home. And what we see over and over again is that when parents try to restrict media, although this can work reasonably well with younger children, as kids get older, restriction doesn't tend to work so well. We kind of create a forbidden fruit situation, and kids will find the content. We also see that parents will often use it as a reward, and then there's sort of an inconsistency in this. So I'm taking your smartphone away, but then I'm going to give it back, or I'm going to allow this, and then I'm not. And then often there's sort of a, I know I'll be able to use this anyway. But there's a different way of doing it where you sort of support a child's autonomy. We call it autonomy supportive parenting, where together you sort of work with your teen or tween to come up with some media rules as a family that you all feel comfortable with. And when that happens, we tend to see much more ways of encouraging positive use of media and mitigating the negative effects.
Can you leave us with some of those silver linings? What have you seen that's encouraging about maybe media and developing sense of self among teenagers, maybe healthy conceptions of sexuality instead of the negatives that we hear about, and education and learning? What are some of those positives?
Well, I think there's just so many sunny sides of media. And when we are living in a world now where our teens, for example, some estimates suggest are using up to 9 hours of media per day, I think it's comforting when we are able to see, okay, there's a lot of evidence that things like gaming can be supporting friendships, creativity, curiosity, working memory. There's evidence that social media is helping friendship formation and identity development. There's evidence that educational media, when used particularly to augment teacher instruction in the classroom or in the home environment, really works. So I don't want parents to feel guilty. I don't want parents to feel fear. I want them to see media as an opportunity. I want them to also see it as something that does require careful attention. It is part of our young people's lives. It's something that we need to consistently be thinking about and asking questions about. But we also have to be realistic that it's part of teens and kids' lives today, and we can learn to work with it and actually really benefit from it.
So, positives on the future. Are there any exciting things that you're looking forward to research-wise, just briefly?
I'm really looking forward to seeing where virtual reality goes. I think we have a lot of opportunities for that. So,
for children and adults.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of interest. I think there's caution that we have to think about. We need to approach it carefully, but I really think there's a lot of interesting things ahead.
Jessica, thank you so much for coming into the studio today and joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
That was Jessica Taylor Petrowski. She joined us today to talk about the effect that media and technology have on children. She's an associate professor at the Department of Communication Science in the University of Amsterdam, and she co-authored the book we've been discussing today. It's called Plugged In: How Media Attract and Affect Youth.